Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on story time when we come back. You know, we Americans talk a lot about private business, and we use terms like private ownership, private property, and private rights. But we also use terms like stocks, bonds, negotiable instruments, licenses, and permits in our pursuit of profit and gain in our business transactions. Well, listen to this. Did you know that stocks and negotiable instruments are the exact opposite to private ownership? That bonds are the exact opposite to private property, and that public business licenses are the exact opposite to private rights, and permits are the exact opposite to private business? And why is it that we see small business being harassed and subjected to such a constant barrage of attacks by government at every level, from Washington to your hometown? And what can you do to protect your life, your liberty, and property from these incessant attacks by government agencies like OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, Zoning and Planning, the IRS, and the swarms of government agents and agencies who are eating out your substance? Well, you know, there's a lot that you can do, and the first step is to inform yourself as to the legal alternatives that you have between public business and private business. Now, if you'd like to learn more about private business, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first? That's the place to start. And let me tell you more about what it is that you're not supposed to know about private business. Now, it's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. That's area code 417-273-4967. And if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email when you get there and then request that free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we've been talking about story time, some real life experiences that people like my Uncle Lyle or my Uncle Buster or Aunt Bessie lived through in the Great Depression. You know, you sit around and you listen from time to time, you know, to the old timers, like maybe Granddad or Aunt Llewellyn or somebody like that, and they're telling you about what happened on their trip, you know, when they went around the world or when they stopped off in New Guinea and they saw the headhunters or whatever. And we try to learn from those experiences of people that maybe fought in the war. And they come back and they tell us these stories about the war and how that war affected them, and or how the prices and wages were frozen during the Nixon administration. We had wage and price controls, you know, and one thing and another. And these are all very, very rewarding experiences, listening to these stories. And the ultimate objective is to give us an opportunity to learn without having to reinvent the wheel each and every time that we have a decision to make. We can think about, well, gee, I remember my granddad, he said, or I remember my Aunt Bessie, she said. And so we can apply these lessons that other people have learned in the past. Put another way, he who fails to learn from history is bound to repeat its mistakes. Now, some years ago, I was in Marengo, Illinois, and I was conducting a tax and status school there, and it was a pretty good-sized group of people, about 80, as I recall. And we were gathered in a big house. This guy had a house, and he had a big meeting room. It was a lot cheaper than going to the Holiday Inn. And it was a large number of people. I don't teach like that anymore. I used to teach kind of like the college universities, where you get all these students together and the preacher comes in and the professor comes in and he preaches the sermon to everybody out there. And sometimes in these big universities, you know, you can have 100, 200, 500 people and listening to these lectures. I found that the old Greek modality, such as the Apostle Paul, when he was trained in law, he studied law at the feet of Gamaliel, private tutor. So I offer semi-private tutoring classes, and we keep our classes down to around 5 people at a time so that everybody has an opportunity to ask questions and participate, and we can zero in on that particular person. You know, one guy's a doctor, one guy's a dentist, one guy's a lawyer, one guy's a blue collar, one lady is a housewife. The solution to their problems are all different, and that's because everybody has a little different circumstance in life. And so trying to teach a great big bunch of people all at the same time is good for propaganda. You know, you can teach the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto to millions of people at a time, but trying to teach somebody with specificity a particular lesson and then and then tailor it so that it can apply to them and their life and their circumstance. Now it requires some tutoring. So I got to admit that I was using the wrong modality for education here. But the moral to the story, though, is that we had a bunch of people here that were gathered around learning about the income tax. And one of the guys was a preacher and his wife, and they were sitting right in the front table. And so it was good for them because they could plug right into the wall socket. And they were at a podium, and so they were right there where they could hear every word. It wasn't like sitting in the back of the room where you're relying upon the echoes from the sound system, which has always been a bugaboo to me. You know, I hate to sit in the back of the room and listen to the reverberation of the sound system bouncing off the walls and the ceilings. And you know, you get to be old, you don't hear all that well anyway. At least I don't. So now I can still hear, but I still have that reverberation bothers me. And so this preacher, I guess, and he's kind of an old guy, probably 60 years old. And at the time, you know, I saw people at 60, you know, as being old. Now that I'm 60, I didn't think 60 was all that old. It's all a matter of perspective, you know. So he's sitting there with his wife, and then we take a break. You know, I teach for about 2 hours, and then I take a break, you know, give everybody an opportunity to go out and smoke Marlboro and go to the bathroom and so on, take a 15, 20-minute break, and then come back. Well, during the break, as almost always is the case, there's always a number of people. They rush up to the podium, and they start accosting me, and they want to ask questions, and they want to talk. So when break time comes, I usually don't get a break, but some of the other people do. So it was break time, and the preacher and his wife didn't get up. They just stayed right there. They were just immobilized. And it was the first day, and it was the first lesson or two. In fact, I probably went through lesson one, two, and three, maybe, in the first 2 hours. And as is my habit, when I teach from the perspective of the Mosaic Law. In other words, I use the Bible as a teaching aid because here in America, well, you know, we could add in all you people of Western Europe and Canada and Australia and New Zealand, and all of us, the Anglo-Saxon people of the world, whether you're French or you're English or Australian, etc., we have a unique perspective on the world, and it comes from the Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments. So whether you're a Catholic, a Protestant, or a Jew, this unique perspective on law comes from the Ten Commandments. And then we have people like Koch, Kent, Blackstone, and others who have written extensively on the common law. You know, the law back in 1600 and 1700 and 1800, and shucks, even so far back as people like Alfred the Great, who codified the law of Moses into Alfred's Dooms. And then we extrapolated that into Magna Carta. And then that's extrapolated into our federal constitutions in Australia and New Zealand. Honestly, I know it sounds crazy, but, you know, here in America, there's 22 principles of the Ten Commandments incorporated into our Constitution. So to ignore the Bible is to ignore the history of Anglo-Saxon law. That's the bottom line. And then here's another little kicker, in case you had never heard this before. Until 1942, if you were a student, you know, like Kennedy, going to Harvard, the first two books that you would be started on in the Harvard Law School would be Blackstone's Commentaries. That makes a lot of sense. And the Book of Hebrews. That doesn't make a lot of sense because, first of all, the Book of Hebrews doesn't have that much to do with law. And I was kind of surprised. I would have thought that we would have started, you know, like with Exodus and the Ten Commandments, you know, if it was me. That's what I do in our law school. You know, I start people off right up front with the Communist Manifesto. So anyway, here's the preacher and his wife, and they're sitting in the front. And I have introduced everybody now to the Ten Commandments, the Law of God, and the Communist Manifesto. And I'm describing the distinctions between these two bodies of law, these two philosophies that go back into ancient times. And then we're gonna predicate our entire school on these philosophies of communism and the Ten Commandments. And so the preacher, as I was talking to some of these people standing around the podium answering their questions, and people get shocked, you know, when you tell them that they're practicing communists, and you finish the communist story, and you go through the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, and then you relate that to their everyday way of life. Like, you know, if you've got children in public school, that's the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto. Do you use Federal Reserve notes in your daily transactions? That's the 5th plank to the Communist Manifesto. Do you pay an income tax? That's the 2nd plank to the Communist Manifesto. All right, so right off the bat, we take a look at your practices every day. You know, Jesus had a wild concept, and he said, you'll know them by their fruits. You know, just take a look at what this guy's doing. So if I say, are you a practicing communist, and you're using Federal Reserve notes, sending your kid to public school, and paying an income tax, yeah, you're practicing 3/10 of the Communist Manifesto. All right, now we didn't used to do that here in America. You know, we didn't have central banks, income tax, and public schools. They're not mentioned here in our Constitution. We do that kind of thing here in America, but we ought not to, and our founding fathers didn't tell us to do that. So as we're talking to these people that are standing around the podium, the preacher interjected this comment. He said to me, you are teaching all of these people to lose their salvation. Now, rest assured, boys and girls, I'm not a preacher. No, sir, I'm not a preacher. I'm not a prophet. I'm not a priest. And I'm not trying to get you saved. I don't give a rat's rectum whether you get saved or not. I'm kind of concerned about me, though, I'm very selfish that way. I'm concerned about me and my salvation, and I work hard to work out my own salvation with fear and trembling, but I'm not trying to work out yours. I really don't care about this preacher. But it was an odd statement, and I've been in this business for decades now, and I have never had anybody make a statement like that. He said, there's 10 or 15 people standing around here, and this guy, just right off the top of his head, says, you are causing these people to lose their salvation. Let me assure you, this class doesn't have anything to do with salvation or the book of Hebrews. It has to do with the income tax, Social Security, and business. You know, the day-to-day business world, you know, where you sign contracts and deliver widgets and hula hoops and lumber and furniture and things like that. Well, anyway, I was kind of surprised, and I need a little clarification there. I said, what do you mean by that? And he said, the Ten Commandments and the law of God have been supplanted by the sacrifice of Jesus. And this Old Testament law has been nailed to the cross with Jesus, and it has been taken out of the way. We're under the new covenant now. Shucks, if you've been to church at all, you probably heard that story before. And he was right about one thing. He said, I teach exactly the opposite to that. I don't think that Jesus nailed the Ten Commandments or the law of God to the cross. And I didn't think so because he said he didn't. So unless he was spaced out smoking something strange or was a damn liar, Jesus told us plainly in Matthew 5:17, he said, think not that I've come to destroy the law. So I didn't think he did. But this preacher evidently thought he didn't, so I needed a little clarification. I said, well, what's your position? He said, my position is that the Ten Commandments and the law of God, that is the Old Testament law of Moses, he didn't use the word law of God, the Old Testament, the law of Moses, was a schoolmaster for a time. And that time expired with the death of Jesus, and now we're under the new covenant. And that law has been taken away. And I said, do you mean repealed? And he said, yes. I said, oh, okay. Well, I hear your position, and it's pretty standard. You know, I've heard other people use that before, or say that before. It's what Billy Graham teaches, Oral Roberts, Jerry Falwell. It's what mainstream American Christendom preaches, teaches, and believes. It's what Catholics believe. It's what Protestants believe. It's what Jews believe. It's what everybody believes. I hear you. I'm not spaced out. I'm aware of that. However, the Bible oftentimes says something different. And so I said, well, I take the opposite view. I believe that the Old Testament laws, that is, Jesus made this observation in Matthew 4, verse 4. He said, man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. And then in Matthew 5:17, he said, think not that I've come to destroy the law of the prophets. I didn't come to destroy, but to fulfill. And I pointed that out to this guy. And he went on and he said, that for verily I say unto you, till heaven and earth pass. And I noted that heaven and earth were still here. He said, one jot or tittle shall in no wise pass from the law until all be fulfilled. Fulfilled. He's talking about the fulfillment of the law. And he said, whosoever therefore shall break one of these least commandments and shall teach men so, he shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whosoever shall do and teach them, the same shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. Sounds like to me that if you were to teach somebody to violate the least commandment, what is the least commandment? Oh, something like maybe wearing a blue fringe, you know, on your clothes. Or carrying a paddle on your side to ease yourself abroad, or, you know, some of these least commandments. He said, and teach men so. So I said, I don't think that one jot or tittle has been removed from the law. I think the whole thing's in full force and effect right now, today, this instant, this minute. And I said, I think we ought to demonstrate that, don't you? Now, this guy's standing here looking at me, you know, with his mouth open. His wife never said a word. His wife never said a word. She was a good Christian. You know, good Christian women, they don't say a word. I'm not sure that good Christian women have brains, nor can talk. They never do. And are very silent. But he was kind of thunderstruck that somebody would actually believe such heresy. That, you know, thou shalt not steal, and thou shalt not kill, and thou shalt not commit adultery. We're still in full force. And the fact that somebody would stand up and say, I don't think those laws have been abolished. Hell, they haven't been abolished in New York State. Well, at least two of them. I mean, you know, adultery has been abolished everywhere. But, you know, but theft and murder still haven't been. At least last I heard, they were still enforcing those laws to some degree. And so I said, well, let's test it. Now, behind me, I have a whiteboard, see? And it used to be in the old days a blackboard. Now they call them whiteboards, and you write on with black erasable ink. And so I turned around behind me, and I wrote down 759. Let's put the number 759 up there. I said, now I looked through the scripture, and I've uncovered 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments. It includes the Ten Commandments, certainly. But it also includes a lot of other statutes, a lot of other do's and don'ts, like tithing, you know. I mean, there's a law that says thou shalt not steal. But there's also, you know, some laws that deal with this thing of tithing. You know, how do you run the government? How do you raise taxes? You know, I'm not opposed to taxes. And some people call me a tax protester, but that it isn't true. You know, just because you call me something doesn't mean that that's what I do. But then a lot of people call people things that they're not, you know. So I said to the man, I said, let's test this for a minute. And I remember there's about 10 or 15 people standing around here, and they're all watching this conversation, listening to them, and they're all getting kind of interested in this. You know, here's this standoff, here's this duel between the preacher and Gordon over here, you know. And it's kind of like the showdown at the OK Corral. And so I said to the man, you've heard it said by them of old time, thou shalt not commit adultery. And he nodded in agreement. He said he had heard that. And I said, now, that law, in your mind, has been abolished and nailed to the cross with Jesus. And so I'll tell you what. I want to take your wife home tonight, and I want to sleep with her. I didn't tell him what I wanted to do with her while we were there in the bedroom, but I think everybody there could kind of figure it all out, you know, being adults and all. And they kind of figured that out. Now, that's shocking. Shocking. And it shocked this man's wife. I mean, she might have been a Christian, but she was shocked at the suggestion that I wanted to take her home and sleep with her. Maybe she was pleasantly surprised. I don't know. Now, he was shocked. And as I looked around the audience, you know, just glancing, you know, I've got pretty good vision. I got peripheral vision, you know, and I can focus my mind through my eyes looking straight ahead at the preacher, and I can see what the other people are thinking over. Some of them are smiling a little bit, like, give it to them, Gordon, because they're kind of anti-religion. And then there's others over there. They're shocked also. I mean, that is rude. I mean, you can't get any ruder, you know, than telling some guy you want to take his wife home and sleep with her. I think that's about as rude as you can get to a Christian. So anyway, he was shocked. He paused. Everybody is, I mean, if you'd had a pin there, you could have dropped it on the carpet and heard it. And he said, but that wouldn't be showing love to your neighbor. I thought that was a marvelous response. You know, that's like asking somebody, you know, like, what's your mother's maiden name? And the answer comes back, my grandmother eats Skippy peanut butter. It's what we call in law off point. I didn't ask the guy, what kind of peanut butter does your granny eat? I asked, what's your mother's maiden name? And the answer is, my grandmother eats Skippy peanut butter. So when I said, I want to take your wife home and sleep with her tonight, what do you think of that? He says, that wouldn't be showing love to your neighbor. Okay. Well, I've had a little training, and so I said to the man, I said, sir, I don't want to sleep with your neighbor. And on top of that, I don't love you. I love your wife, and she's the one that I want to sleep with. And I said, what's wrong with that? Well, it's pretty obvious, you know, if that law has been abolished, nailed to the cross, and taken out of the way. I mean, if it's like prohibition, you know, one day you can drink, and then the next day you can't drink, and then you repeal prohibition, and then the third day you can drink, you know, that's a law. That's a repealing of the law. And now what was formerly illegal is now legal. So if the law has been taken out of the way, nailed to the cross with Jesus, then it must have been repealed. You got any other solution for that? And if it's been repealed, well, then it's no longer the law, and what was formerly prohibited is now permitted, isn't it? And, you know, come on, kids, let's think about this in logical terms. Well, he paused for a moment, and you could see the wheels, you know, going around, you know, like his eyes, you know, had slot machine reels in them, and pretty soon they come up 777, you know? And I was expecting his mouth to open and coins to flow out, and they didn't. But I just thought I'd throw that in. And he said, well, that law has not been abolished. Did you hear that, boys and girls? He said, that law hasn't been abolished. So, okay. So I turned around, and I put a 1 under that 759 that I had up on the board. I put a 1 there now, drew a line, put a minus sign, and then wrote 758. Well, you know, when Moses came down off the mountain, he had the Ten Commandments. As time progressed, they added to that. And then they wrote up, you know, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. And so by the time Moses died, he had 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments there. Let me count them up. 759. Some guy, he calls me, he corrects me. He says, no, the Jews counted them up, and they got 613. Well, excuse me, kids, did it ever occur to you that the Jews miscounted? I'm up to 759. I've never said that 759 is the magic number. Hell, I might have missed two or three. Maybe there's 763 or 777. I don't know. But I counted 759. I wrote them all out. I got a book over here called The Mosaic Law. I wrote them all out. So I know there's 759. So the Jews are going to have to catch up with me. But then, you know, somebody else might come along and say, oh, no, Gordon, you're wrong. There's 786. Well, then I need to catch up. You know, show those to me, would you? All right, so I said, you've heard it said by them of old time, thou shalt not steal. And he nodded his head again. He said, yes. Now, his tape recorder is plugged into the wall. It's one of these big old boom boxes. Remember those old things he used to have back in the 80s? This is back about 1982 or 3 or 4 or something like that. Great big thing is sitting on the table there. And it's going round and round, you know, and it's tape recording this. And the cord is right there on the table, running across the top of the table into an outlet over here on the wall. His table was up next to the wall. And so I reached down and I took a hold of the cable, you know, the cord that's plugged in, and I put a little slack in it, and then I snapped it, kerplunky, and I just jerked it right out of the wall. What would you think if I just walked in? You know, you're sitting here and you're tape recording. I reach down, I take the cord to your tape recorder and snap it right out of the wall. What'd you think of that? I thought you'd think that was pretty shocking. Well, this guy thought that was pretty shocking too. And then on top of that, I reached down and I picked up his tape recorder. I had a handle, you know, built into the top of it. I picked up his tape recorder. I looked him right in the eyeballs and I said, "Mine." And I turned on my heel and took about 2 steps. And this guy was so shocked by my aberrant behavior. And I got to concede, that's pretty aberrant behavior, isn't it? And he said, "That's my tape recorder." Oh, he was excited. Boy, did I get his attention. He said, "That's my tape recorder." And then I'm about 2 steps away, and I whipped around and I said, "No, it isn't. It's mine, because I just took it. And I'm bigger than you are." And besides that, the law that says thou shalt not steal has been abolished and nailed to the cross with Jesus, hasn't it? Now there's a period here of stony silence. And again, you know, you could see the wheels turning and turning in his brain. See? And when he got through turning the wheels in his brain, he said, "Well, that law hasn't been abolished either." So I turned around and I wrote -1 under my 758. And then I wrote the new sum 757. Now, I said to him and the rest of the audience standing around there, I said, there's 759 of these laws and we just covered two. And in my school, the Mosaic Law, I cover all 759 of them. Just like that. And I haven't been able to find a single one of them that has been repealed, abolished, watered down, or taken out of the way. And I think I can demonstrate that just like I did these two. And I said, "Boys and girls, that takes 42 hours to demonstrate all 759 laws organized into 133 titles or subjects." And then I said, "But we don't have time to do that today because we must now come back to class and take up tax and status." And there's the story on Marengo, Illinois. All right, kids, I've got to give you a mid-course correction here and remind you that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard 7 days a week worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Remember, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well. Remember, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. And the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package, a free introductory CD package. Now, if you'd like to order one of those, you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. If you don't want one, don't call. If you want one, then call us. We don't want to send you something you don't want. That's why we ask you to call us, and then it shows that you're interested in nothing, and that way I'll tell you what you want to hear. I don't want to tell somebody something that he don't want to know. The number again is 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program, remember, mine and mine alone, so don't blame it on anybody else. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station, and that's because they're all normal people voting the straight Republican or Democratic tickets. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law or an editorial review, then please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. You know, once in a while, you run into a con man like Dennis Lee. He was a good con man. I like Dennis. I always appreciate a good con man. A con man is a nice guy. He's a guy that everybody likes. And it's important that a con man be liked, because if you were a rude, obnoxious jerk, you could not be a con man, because people don't like rude, obnoxious jerks. They like nice guys. They like people that are smooth and preach deceits. That's why preachers are so well liked and revered in our society, because they're con men. and they're good at it. A con man is a guy like Franklin D. Roosevelt. My dad told me, he said, Roosevelt could lie to you. You could look him in the eye and you knew he was lying to you, but you would believe it because you liked him and you liked what he had to say. Well, Roosevelt was a little before my time. I mean, you know, I was born during the Roosevelt years, during the Depression years, but I never had a chance to listen to him, you know, at any great length, you know, during the heyday of the New Deal. And so I never experienced the direct lies that Franklin Roosevelt told, but I'm experiencing it now with Clinton and Bush. I mean, you know, you've got to admit, Bill Clinton is one of the smoothest liars God ever put breath into. And George Bush, he's nowhere near as good as Clinton at lying. I mean, you know, when he lies, it's right out in the open. It's like a six-year-old kid with his arm in the cookie jar, and you catch him and ask him what he's doing. And he says, well, I'm looking for weapons of mass destruction. Okay, so Bush is not a smooth liar. He's not the kind of guy that, you know, can lie and make you love it. Clinton could. So imagine if my dad was alive today, you know, he'd say, wow, I mean, this guy Clinton is something else. Why, he's better than Franklin D. Roosevelt, and he was the champion of liars. Okay, so you get in the drift of where I'm going here with this. Well, Dennis Lee was that kind of guy. I mean, this guy just dripped and oozed scientific lies. I mean, he wasn't selling politics. Dennis Lee was selling energy machines, perpetual motion machines. Now, see, in the old days, you know, 100, 200, 300, 400 years ago, people were selling perpetual motion machines. Okay, well, now that you've heard the story on perpetual motion machines, you're alerted to the fact that there's no such thing as perpetual motion, so therefore there can't be a perpetual motion machine, so therefore we can't con you. So they don't call them perpetual motion machines. They call them free energy packages, or energy machines. And then they throw some names around like Tesla. See, and then they use words like science. Okay, well, one day I'm in Pasadena, California, and I was conducting a school down there at the Holiday Inn. Dennis Lee blows into town. And he rents a room next to mine, and he's selling perpetual energy machines. He's selling energy machines. Well, in one of my off periods, you know, we don't teach school all the time, so, you know, we take off, and Lee happened to be there, and so I went in to listen to the Lee presentation. And I sat there, you know, in the audience, and Lee was, he had slides. Oh, my God, the slides and the pictures and the presentation made me look like a country bumpkin. I mean, I felt stupid by comparison. This guy was smooth, articulate, wonderful. I loved it. And he sat there and he explained his dynamic energy machine. He had some names and he used science. I mean, he used words that were 5, 6, 7 syllables. He used words that my tongue could never wrap around. And I was just absolutely amazed and impressed. And he talked and he talked. And the more he talked, the more excited I got. I mean, I was sitting there on the edge of my seat. And he told me about how they were going to make these energy machines based upon the Tesla principle, and all this energy was out there in the atmosphere, and all we had to do was tap into it, and that we're being raped, robbed, and pillaged by our government and the Enrons, you know, Enron, you know, raping, robbing, and pillaging people, and Standard Oil, and all these energy companies, and the government, and conspiracy. I mean, he was a politician, and he was a right-winger, and he was a tax protester, and he was appealing to my vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear, had me sitting on the edge of my seat. I was so excited, almost ready to wet my pants. And so he got real excited, and he said, now, would you like to have free energy? How many of you would like to have free energy, free electricity for the rest of your life? Never again pay a power bill. God, I was excited. I raised my hand. I think everybody in the audience raised his hand. And he came back. It was almost like being at a tent camp riot. You know, where the preacher gets up there. How many of you want to go to heaven today? You know, well, everybody wants to go to heaven. So everybody gets excited and raises their hands and jumps up and down, hoops and hollers, and, you know. And so, unbeknownst to me, now there are some shills in the audience, and these guys are taking notes. You know what I mean? They're salesmen. They're sitting there taking notes at all the fools that are raising their hands. And so they see me raising my hand. And so he'd ask me this question, I'd raise my hand, and he'd ask another question, I'd raise my hand. And so pretty soon he comes to the end of his presentation, and he said, now for all of you that want to do the government in and put the electric energy companies out of business, you come back and sign up. Well, I didn't go back and sign up, but I'd raise my hands, And a guy comes over to me, and in fact, there's two of them, and it's like a Mutt and Jeff routine. So two guys come over to me, and they engaged me in conversation and said, well, would you like to have one of these machines? And I said, you bet I would. And he said, now, these machines are $17,000. And I said, that's cheap. I said, hell, I could use three of them right now. I don't want to buy three. I just want to buy one and see how it works. And then after I buy one, I'll probably buy one for the 608 place and one for the HH place. I'll probably buy three. And the guy says, well, how would you pay for that? And I said, with gold. And they were kind of shocked, you know. And he said, well, what kind of gold? And this is back before, you know, this is before we had the U.S. gold coin. And so I said, well, with Kruger Rands or Maple Leafs, whatever you want. So he bypassed that one because that was a little over his head. He didn't quite know how to conduct this transaction in gold. So he said, do you have the gold with you today? And I said, yes, yes, I can pay for it today. And he whipped out his order book, and he had the paperwork ready to go. And he said, would you like to order one of these today? And I said, yes, I would. And so he took my name and address and phone number and one thing and another. He wanted to know what I did, and I told him, and one thing, and then this went on pretty well. And so he said, okay, well, if you've got the payment, I'll take it right now. And I said, have you got the machine? And if you do, I'll take it right now. And he said, no, we don't have the machine. We haven't got the factory completed yet. And I said, okay, well, all those pictures that Dennis was showing us up there on the screen, where is that machine? And I'll buy that one. He said, well, that's our prototype machine. We can't sell that one. I said, oh. So I said, what you're really selling here is orders, not machines. And he said, well, yeah, that's right. We're taking orders. I said, okay, well, take my order and put it down. And as soon as you get one of these machines made, you bring it over to my farm and you plug it into the wall. And if it works, I will pay you $17,000 in gold. COD, cash on delivery. And he says, oh, no, that's not the way this works. The way this works is you pay us $17,000 and we'll put you on the list and you'll go right to the top of the list. You won't have to wait. See, and if you don't do that, you'll have to wait. You won't be able to get it right away. You'll have to wait maybe years if you don't take advantage of this opportunity today. So I said, well, okay, that's fine. I will wait as long as it takes to get one of these machines, but you've got my information, put it in your file, and as soon as you have one of these machines, after you have already sold thousands, maybe millions of these machines to other people, then when you finally get a minute and you have time to make one for me, remember that I'm ready to buy. And he said, but by that time, the price will probably be higher than $17,000. You're getting in on the ground floor. If you take advantage of this offer today, you will be saving half, maybe three quarters of the price of these machines will be selling for. By that time, they will be in such demand that we won't be able to fill the orders fast enough. And I said, well, okay, that's fine. By that time, it's probably going to be worth $34,000. And if it's worth $34,000, 5 or 10 years from now, when you finally get one made and you deliver it to my farm, plug it in and it works, then I'll pay you twice as much. I'll pay you $34,000, because if the economics of it are as good as they are today at $17,000, they'll be just as good tomorrow at $34,000. Hell, it might be worth $68,000. I wouldn't say that it isn't, because I haven't seen it yet, and you don't have one to deliver, so I'm really not able to tell you how much it's really worth to me. But I can see it's worth $17,000, and if you've got one today, I'll buy it. And if you had two today, I would only buy one, because I only want to buy one, plug it in, test it, and see if it works. In fact, I want you to plug it in. I want you to test it and show me that it does everything that you said it will. And if it does, I will pay you in gold coin, $17,000 worth of it. And if you got one today and you can demonstrate it right here, I'll pay you today and load it in my motor home and haul it home. Well, they worked on me for quite a while. And I'm an old-timey guy, and I've been around a few times, and I've been screwed, blued, and tattooed by these blue suede salesmen once or twice before. You know, I'm not the sharpest marble in the drawer, but I can get pretty damn sharp after I get raked over the coals a time or two. And so I practice a very simple business principle, and that is never risk more than you can afford to lose. And at the time, $17,000 was quite a bit, and I didn't think that I could afford to lose $17,000. So I decided that I didn't want to lose $17,000, so I'd take delivery COD and I'd buy one, test it, see if it worked, because if it worked, it's going to save me a lot of money, and I pay a lot of money in electricity. And they didn't have a machine to sell. Now, they went out and they sold a bunch of machines. I don't know how many, but there was a bunch. At least that's what the Attorney General of California reported, that a lot of people bought those machines. Now, Dennis Lee never did build a factory, never did produce a single machine. He took a lot of people $17,000, and he never delivered a single machine to any of those people. So those people are out there $17,000, each and every one of them. But I wasn't out my $17,000. Now, here's the bottom line. You pay the $17,000 cash up front, and then if they don't deliver the machine, you're out your $17,000 and the machine. If you keep your $17,000 in your pocket awaiting COD delivery, you will be out the machine, but you won't be out your $17,000. And I didn't see any point or purpose in being out both the machine and the money. All right, so tuck it away in your heart. Never risk more than you can afford to lose. And if $17,000 is more than you can afford to lose, then don't risk it. See how simple that is? It's called a business principle, of which there are 87. 87 of those old-timey business principles. And you know, if you could master and practice those 87 business principles, hell, if you could master 50 of those 87 business principles, it would make you tons of money. You know that? You know, there was a time in America when people practiced the Ten Commandments and the basic business principles that come from the Bible. And those old-timey people started off with 13 backward colonies that we would call third world nations today. And in 113 years, those 13 backward third world nations became the envy of the world. They became the wealthiest, most powerful nation in the world, economically, politically, and militarily, and they did it without any foreign aid from anybody. And they did it with gold and silver coin under the Coinage Act of 1792 and these 17 words that say, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt," and they practice, "Thou shalt not steal, and you shall not have an unjust weight and balance in your bag." Pretty important business principles. Produced a lot of wealth. And then the children of those wise, old-timey people got real smart and went to college. And they got real smart, and they created a Federal Reserve with paper money, fiat currency, interest and usury, unjust weights and balances, and became the world's greatest debtor nation on the slippery slope to oblivion. And there you have it, boys and girls. It's the Dennis Lee story. Never risk more than you can afford to lose. Now, along that line, I once went to work for a man named Frank Rocha. Now, Frank Rocha was illiterate. What that means is that he couldn't read and he couldn't write. But he could count. And he was a businessman. He's the only businessman I have ever met in my life that had $1 million and couldn't read and couldn't write. He's kind of like the deacon of St. James, you know, which illustrates another point, that just because you can't read and write doesn't mean you can't do business. As a matter of fact, just because you can't read and write doesn't mean that your brain doesn't work and you can't think. Because old Frank, he could think pretty darn good. He came from the Azores. It's a Portuguese colony or a Portuguese territory out in the Atlantic Ocean. And he hired me when I was about 15 years old, and I was working on his farm. He was a dairy farmer on Cannibal Road there in, it was on Lighthouse Road, was it? Cannibal was on Lighthouse Road in Lolita, California. So anyway, he was still farming with horses in 1955 when I went to work there. And so here he was down there in the field, and he was working them horses, and I'd never, it was summertime, you know, and I needed a job, summer job, you know. I think I was about to become a sophomore in high school, as I recall, something like that, maybe freshman, sophomore. But I was still a high school kid, and I needed a little summer money to buy clothes with one thing and another, and he hired me. And while I was working there, he made a strange observation to me. He said, "You know, son, if you were to go back to the Azores, where I came from," he said, "you would starve to death." He said, "You couldn't make it there in the Azores. You couldn't make it in Portugal." But he said, "The Portuguese can come over here to the New World, can come over here to America, poor, uneducated, no money, and make it big and make it easy. It's all downhill." And I thought, no, that's kind of strange. And he said to me, as time went on, you know, he said that he never had shoes until he was 17 years old, never spent a day in school. School? School? School was for rich people. School was for people, you know, that had money. There was schools there, but not for the likes of the Roaches. So he never went to school, and neither did his brothers. And he said, unemployment was rampant everywhere. He said it was a struggle to survive. Anybody that had a little piece of ground was out busily farming it, you know, and trying to grow enough off of it to eat. He said it was a dirt scrabble existence. And he said it was a great chance, a great opportunity for him to leave the islands and come to the United States and to work for a guy. When he got to New Bedford, Massachusetts, he got off the boat. He had $5 in his pocket, which had been sent to him by a fellow named Nielsen in Lolita, California, who had called for him through a broker. And Frank had signed up with the broker to apprentice himself to this farmer. So he got off the boat there in New Bedford. He went into a little shop at $5. Now he's got a 7-day train ride from New Bedford, Massachusetts to Lolita, California. He doesn't speak the language. He doesn't know anybody in the United States except this guy Nielsen, who's going to pick him up at the train station at Lolita. So he goes into the store, and he puts on the counter the $5 bill that he's got. It's paper. It's a $5 bill. It's 1922. He doesn't have gold. He's got a $5 bill, Federal Reserve note. Puts it on the counter, and he goes over, and he picks up one salami and one loaf of French bread. He puts it on the counter. He looks at the guy who takes the $5 and goes to make change. And so Frank held up his hand. Stop, stop. Goes back over, gets another salami and another loaf of French bread, sets it down. Now, there's their communication. And so Frank looks at the guy, and the guy gives him a come on motion. So he puts another salami down, he puts another loaf of bread, he puts another salami down, another loaf of bread, he puts another salami down, another loaf of bread, he's got 5 salamis, 5 loaves of bread, and the guy holds his hand up like a traffic cop stop. Takes his $5, Frank takes his bag of salami and bread, goes down, gets on the train with his ticket, and rides out to Lolita, California. Years later, this same Frank Rocha, who'd gotten off the boat in 1922, in 1944 had saved $5,000 between 1922 and 1944, and he put it down on a dairy. By 1955, 11 years later, he owned the dairy, and in 1956, a woman up at the bank embezzled and $25,000 out of his account. He got his money back, of course, but the fact that he had $225,000 in his account in 1956 is pretty telling, isn't it? Now, I'm a Gordon, and my whole family's been over here for several generations, and there wasn't a Gordon, or any group of Gordons, or every Gordon that was in our family that could put $225,000 on the counter, and we all went to public school, and we could all read and write. And I asked Frank, I said, what was the secret of your success? Why were you able to make all of this money? And he said, the secret in business is to always save half. Now, you see, Americans today have a negative savings rate, with good cause, because if you're saving money in dollars, you're losing 10% to inflation. But he said, always save half. And he said, we always save half so that we can develop investment capital so that we can buy, sell, and trade with it. I always save half because that's what I learned from Frank, the illiterate from the Azores, the man who was a millionaire before he died in 1970, the man who had never had shoes until he was 17, the man who came to America and couldn't speak the language. And yet Americans who go to college, Americans who are educated, Americans who speak the language, don't know how to make money. And that's because they don't understand the 87 business principles that this illiterate knew and understood. Now, I'm not suggesting that Frank knew and understood all 87 of the business principles that come from the Bible, or that come from sound business practices, or that come from our founding fathers and our republic, but he knew enough of those business principles, even though he couldn't read and he couldn't write, to make $1 million in America. Boys and girls, when $1 million was a lot of money. And the secret to his success, he told me, was always save half. All right, I've got to leave it right there. We're about out of time, so let me remind you that you are listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, and we'll tell you more. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.